It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Giron will be with us in a few minutes to answer your questions. But we're going to start with an existential threat to trees, new construction. We'll also talk about how to protect your trees when you are building. And DNR Forester Mark Vitosh is here. Hello, Mark.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being with us today. And we are seeing a lot of new construction. In fact, this slowdown because of the pandemic has been really a great opportunity for cities to get a lot of stuff done without a lot of inconvenience to a lot of people. So you've been observing that there's a whole lot going on.
I'm seeing a lot of dirt being dug, a lot of trenching, a lot of movement of big equipment. And all those things could, the other thing I'm seeing, too, is just even in Johnson County, Linn County, places like that where we have woodlands, rural areas, people are building new houses. We always want to, instead of build it and bring the trees to us, folks want to go to the trees. And so we're often building in areas where existing trees are already there. So we can get that immediate impact. But sometimes we forget what our actions may do to those trees.
Right. We want to move into a beautiful wooded area, but we might be killing trees just by doing that. So, of course, we can look at a tree and we can see the tree, Mark, but we only see the above ground part of a tree. What else do we need to be thinking about when we look at a tree and try to understand its location?
Well, it's just like our feet. Without our feet, we don't have support, and that's what the roots are to the tree. The roots give that tree great support. They help it stand where it's at, but they also basically are the beginning of the highway. And that highway is the link to water. And water, as it is in humans, is key to life for trees. And basically, those root tips help absorb that moisture and that water, get it through the plumbing system as the leaves pull it up the tree. And so those roots, when I grew up, I always thought that roots were kind of like a carrot in the ground. You pulled it out of the tree and that's what it looked like. But with a lot of research and a lot of different things, it really depends on the soil conditions. But we've learned that tree roots need oxygen. They need moisture. They need pore space to be able to move through. And those conditions tend to be best fairly shallow in the soil. So most of the roots that absorb nutrients and water are probably in the top 6 to 24 inches of the soil. Now, some tree roots will have what we call sinker or anchor roots that may go 2 to 3 feet deep. But in general, those roots that really support the growth and life of that tree are very shallow. So any activities that we do, even 6 to 7 inches deep, could have an impact on those roots. The other thing is those roots, we always had that theory that, you know, where the tree stops, where the branches stop, we tend to call that the drip line. And that drip line, we always thought some people thought that's where the roots stop. But we have learned that those roots go well beyond the edge of the branches. So that tree is taking up a very large area underground that we're often not aware of.
So, of course, we can, when we think about new construction, I, a lot of us would think, okay, you know, obviously right where we're building is a place where the trees would be impacted. But of course, now we know that the roots go out farther than we might have suspected, but also some of those minor changes that we might make around construction, that can affect trees too. So tell me what kinds of site changes can affect trees.
Well, the biggest ones are basically things like changing the grade. Anytime we bring new soil in or we remove soil, obviously if we're bringing new soil in, and we're putting that over the root zone or portions of the root zone. As I mentioned before, oxygen is very important to tree roots. And as we'll probably get into, different tree species can adapt to changes better than others. But in general, if we add soil, even an inch to 2 inches over the top of an existing root system on some species, that can definitely have an impact on those trees. If we remove soil and we get a few inches deep, we can start to remove roots. The other big thing that we don't think about is soil compaction. Again, like I said, the key to soil is it allows the root to move its way through to be able to absorb nutrients and absorb water. And soil is full of air and air spaces and spaces that allow that movement. But as we move heavy equipment, or even if we have a construction project, let's say on a campus, and we're moving foot traffic across an area where we never had foot traffic, and the soils are wet, and we're moving equipment, foot traffic across there, it compresses those soil pores. And if those soil pores are compressed, it doesn't allow, actually reduces the oxygen levels and doesn't allow that root system to move through there. And if it doesn't allow the roots to move through there, it also reduces drainage and can cause problems if we get too much moisture, and can, you know, cause things like root rot, other problems like that. If we have low oxygen, that can damage the root system. The other thing we don't think about, too, sometimes is just if we have a tree that, for whatever reason, the terrain got significant water during rainstorms, and then if we change the environment around that tree and the movement of water through construction, and all of a sudden that tree is high and dry now, that tree has to adjust to those changes. Or if that tree used to be dry and because of site changes even off to the edge, all of a sudden every time it rains, that tree is standing underwater. Those are major changes that that tree is not adaptive to. And then the last thing is just landscaping. A lot of times if we have established trees or established, you know, like in established woodlands where we build a house, all of a sudden we want turf. So we take out a lot of the understory vegetation, the native shrubs, the native understory plants, and then all of a sudden we're putting this green grass that has a lot of needs, a lot of wants, and that can cause competition for tree roots. And even coming in and basically deciding that we're going to put a hosta garden under an established tree, if we're rototilling or digging large holes or digging where we're actually damaging root systems, all those different things can have an impact on a tree's root system.
How long does it take to see this kind of damage in a tree? Because, I mean, I think a lot of us make those changes without thinking of anything. And, you know, a couple of months later, the tree's still looking fine. When does that show up?
And this is where it makes it challenging, and this is why we like to educate people about this, because a lot of times trees have reserves, and if their energy is lost, they can use those reserves for a while to continue to maintain some health. But if they're using reserves and not refilling those reserves, at some point they start to become stressed. So it's not uncommon for damage-related construction activities to not show up for maybe 1 to even up to 7 to 8 years after that activity. So it can be many years before you start to see the symptoms. But the one thing that I usually tie to root damage and construction activities is usually if I start to see problems, it usually starts at the tops of the trees. So if they start to have problems, they'll start to decline from the tips of the top branches, because if they've lost root system, they can only absorb so much water. And if that tree only gets so much water, that water moves to the area of the least resistance. So it doesn't make it all the way to the tips. So that's why we often see damage from the tips down. And again, it could be 2, 3, 4, 5 years before you start to see that, but that means that tree reached a point that it can no longer keep itself going on reserves.
Now, of course, there are going to be many trees that just are not going to survive new construction, and those choices have to be made. But if there's a tree or a group of trees that you really want to protect, what are some steps that you can take that would protect them?
Well, there's good information out there on the web. The University of Minnesota, it's an older publication, has a really good publication about protecting trees during construction, and other agencies have it too. But in general, we often talk about, you see different literature, the root protection zone. And the root protection zone can be a number of things, but in general, to start, is often that drip line area. So where the branches stop, that's considered the drip line. And basically, if we draw a circle all the way around the drip line and we prevent damage within that root zone inside the drip line, that's the best way to do it, is not to do any activities within that area. That's not always possible, but the challenge that we have in woodlands and even other areas, if trees are growing close together, that tree may not have a wide crown, but as we said, that root zone can go well beyond the edge of the drip line. So sometimes we use different calculations, and one example is we'll measure the diameter of the trunk at 4.5 feet off the ground, and let's say it's 10 inches in diameter, and we'll multiply that number times 1.5. That gives us the number 15, and 15 is the amount of feet that we want to give radial protection to that tree. So if we have this 10-inch tree, we want 15 foot of radial protection, or 30-foot diameter protection. And if we can, we would actually put a physical temporary fence around that 30-foot area and say that this is a no-work zone. Let's stay out of there. No activities. Let's protect that tree.
We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Mark Vitosh is with me, DNR Forester. We've been talking about how to protect trees, existing trees in construction zones. But of course, Mark is here to answer your questions about any of the trees in your life. And Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, will be with us in just a moment to answer your questions about any other plants you have in your life. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and we are here to answer your questions. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. If you've got tree questions, you are in luck. DNR Forester Mark Vitosh is here today. Richard Giron is also here, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
And long ago, my grandmother taught me to watch the peonies very closely this time of year because, of course, she was always hoping that the peonies would bloom in time for Memorial Day. Out at my house, they're not quite there, and now I'm kind of rooting for them not to bloom before we get all this rain. What do the peonies look like in central Iowa?
I think it's going to be next weekend. Before they're in bloom.
I think that's perfect this year. all those rainstorms in the forecast, I don't want that.
It's actually closer to the true Memorial Day.
Oh.
In the past, May 30th.
Okay, right. That makes perfect sense. Okay. So we'll be a little patient and maybe make some trips to cemeteries a week late this year. That would be all right, as long as we've got some beautiful flowers to share. We already have a lot of questions for you guys. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And let's go first to John in Waterloo. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I walk on a bike trail up in Waterloo, and I'm walking along, and I look down. There's a vine that's running along cut side the ground. It's probably about an inch to an inch and a half in diameter, and then something comes off that, another about an inch in diameter, and they cut it off at the top. And oozing from the top, it looks like a sap that is bright orange and yellow. And it's running down the side, probably about a foot and a half. and it looks like a candle, you know, a melted candle or whatever. It's the sap looks really thick, but it's a very, very bright orange. And I just wondered if anybody had an idea what it was.
It's wild grape is probably the vine. There's a couple other vines that get cut that way too. But there's actually a mold that grows on basically when that vine is cut. There's a lot of sugar content that comes out of that. And actually there's a mold that grows on that that actually has an orange color to it. And it's very common on wild grape.
All right. So is it? It's nothing to be concerned about. It's just
it's
unusual.
It's actually just really cool.
All right.
But I've seen it a lot this spring, Charity and John, in the woods where I work with people. A lot of times, if we have wild grapevines, you know, they're great for habitat. But if they're in a desirable tree, sometimes they can get up in and grow and cause damage to the tree. So we'll cut them. And this spring, I saw a lot of that orange mold on those cut vines.
All right. Well, John, consider yourself lucky. And thanks for calling. Here's a question for you, Richard, from Samuel on Twitter. He says, I want to try strawberries in my garden. Will they provide fruit this year?
Well, you have two basic types. You have the June bearers, which bear once in June, typically. And if you plant those, you should pinch off the flower buds so all their energy goes into establishment. If you plant day neutral strawberries, and these will bear periodically through the summer, you should pinch them off until about July 4th, the flowers. And any flowers that develop after that would be allowed to develop into fruit. So you have the day neutral varieties like Seascape, Albion. They would produce later in the summer.
He also is looking for cantaloupe tips. Any best practices there?
Just make sure it's a sunny, well-drained site, and that's what they like. They don't like wet sites or shady sites, so plenty of sun and a good, well-drained soil.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Kyle is on the line in Parkersburg. Hi, Kyle.
Hey.
Hi, what's your question?
I've got like a 25-year-old red oak that my grandparents planted at our place originally. And it's in the middle of our yard. Not much has been done around it or to it in the last couple years. But it basically looks like it's in the dead of winter right now. No leaves or anything like that.
So the thing I would look for, Kyle, is see if you see any buds and see if it scrapes green. Because the one thing that I've seen in northern Iowa and north of Interstate 80 is we had a lot of frost damage. And if the leaves were just coming out, I've looked at a lot of plantings and stuff north of Interstate 80, and there's been tons of frost damage. So I would look, scrape on the branches.
Well, the buds seem like they're intact still.
Okay. But scrape to see if the branches are green, and I think you still have some time and things could be okay. Now, if it scrapes and you don't see any green, then something happened to that tree between fall and now. But and I think Richard may comment on this too. I haven't seen as much down here in kind of the southern half of Iowa. But I think Richard has seen or had reports of numerous different species kind of leafing out slowly. Is that correct, Richard?
Yeah, we have some trees on campus like bald cypress that right now they look dead, but they're just starting to leaf out. And I'm assuming that we had those very cold temperatures in April where it got down to like 17 or 18 degrees at night, and I think that may have damaged it a little bit. Also, some of the ash are leafing out slowly, too. So, again, I think it's a cold weather that we had.
I wouldn't panic yet, Kyle. I would scrape for green. If you see green, give it some time, and hopefully things will keep coming.
All right, Kyle, thanks a lot for your call. Here's a question from email. Do you recommend allowing girdled trees to stand for habitat? Specifically, I've thinned my property of black locust trees, and they're currently standing approximately 20 and a half an acre. I assumed they'd be good habitat for wildlife, but I don't want to promote potential disease.
That's a great question. And as long as those trees are not creating a risk, as long as you don't have a trail right next to it, a bench, the house, whatever, dead trees provide great habitat for woodpeckers, a lot of other species, and as for some species, as that bark starts to slough, it becomes habitat for a number of our native bats. So there's a lot of pluses to that, and as long as they're not creating a risk, usually we look to try to have anywhere from 7 to 10 what we call snag trees or dead trees per acre in wooded areas. And as long as they're not creating risk, there's really no diseases. I mean, there'll be decay and stuff like that, but that's normal decay. And so usually there's not a trigger where that's going to be a problem with other species.
All right. Here is a question from Julia in Marion. Is it safe to put an eggs and water mix, including eggshells, on my raspberries to keep the deer off? Is there something better or safer that I can use? Richard, what do you think?
Well, there are some deer repellents, and oftentimes one of the ingredients are eggs. That's one of the ingredients. Oftentimes they have things like garlic, maybe some thyme, whatever, in these products. You can try those. They smell awful when you spray the plants. And supposedly the taste will kind of deter the deer. The problem is that you have to reapply it after a heavy rain, and sometimes they work and sometimes they don't.
And she's talking about raspberries, so you would want to definitely only spray this when you're not actively producing raspberries, right?
Right, right. You would not want to spray when they're actually beginning to ripen, because there might still be some aftertaste there. So,
all right. Well, good luck, Julia. But that doesn't sound like it would be dangerous unless you are eating raspberries with this stuff on it, which I don't think you'd want to do anyway.
Eventually, it kind of wears off, but it does smell awful when you spray. And you can still spray it you can still smell it a few days later, but eventually it does wash off.
All right. You can call with your questions, 866-780-9100, or email us, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa with ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Geron and DNR Forester Mark Vitosh. From Susan, I have an 8-year-old sugar maple tree that has only partially leafed out the last two springs and summer. The middle part this year looks all dead and has no leaves. There are a couple of lower branches that have normal leaves on them so far. I've been told that there's a lot of clay down below the topsoil in my yard. Should we take this tree down?
If by cutting that top part out, Susan, there's not much left with the tree, or you can't create a main stem out of it, I would probably consider starting over. Now, if she can cut that out and there is a new branch that could be a leader, she could play with it. But if the majority of the center is gone, it's probably something she wants to start over. The challenge is usually if a tree dies within the first 2 to 3 years after planting, it often means that either the tree wasn't in the best condition when she got it, or during establishment it either got too much water or not enough water. Because that water is really key in getting those trees established. So if you have loss in that first 2 years or so, it's usually related to either the tree's actual condition at the beginning or watering. So it sounds like she might want to start over.
All right, let's go back.
But she may want to look at her soils, too, to make sure if she really thinks there's a lot of clay and stuff, she may consider some other species.
Right. Okay, plant accordingly. Let's go back to the phones. Jeff is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Charity. Thanks for taking the call.
Yeah.
I had to cut down a 20-year-old box elder tree in my backyard here a week or two ago, and it provided some great shade and great privacy, but my backyard is quite small, and that tree was kind of in the perfect spot slash only spot for a tree in my yard. The stump is still there, and I'm just wondering if we remove the stump, either by grinding or digging it out, is it possible to plant a new tree in that spot, or how close can we plant to that spot?
Jeff, I would probably try to go at least 3 or 4 feet away. If you can go that far and not go right in the spot, even if you grind it out, I think you'll, because what happens when you, even when you grind them out, there's kind of a area below and they tend to, it kind of tends to sink and stuff a little bit, and they don't always get all the root system. So if you can just go a few feet away where there's no major stump, or in between where maybe there was some roots. And if it was only 20 years old, it won't be completely extensive. But if you can just go a few feet away and find a good spot, then I think you can be fairly close.
Okay. And can we plant that tree nowish, or should we wait a couple years for that old root system to...
You can plant it now. The only thing is, I mean, you can do it this spring. You can do it this fall. I wouldn't, if I'm going to do it now, I'd probably do it fairly soon. You know, as it gets warmer and warmer, it's harder. Even if we're using potted trees and stuff, it's harder on the trees the later in the summer we plant. I mean, spring is the time. We're still kind of in that, but it's going to start getting hotter and hotter. But I would probably spend the time making sure that I pick a plant that fits well. So maybe I take the summer to kind of figure it out and do a fall planting or a planting next spring. But I take a little time and make sure I get the right tree that fits that. But if you know what you want, you could probably still plant in the next week or two if you're planting like a potted tree.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for your call, Jeff. Next, we've got Marion in Iowa City. Hi, Marion.
Hi there. Thank you for your program. I appreciate this on Friday mornings.
Oh, thank you, Marion. What's your question?
I'm concerned about my green ash tree. It was planted about 25 years ago, and I've taken good care of it. It seems like it's losing so many of the young leaves. It's raining little ash tree leaves as I look outside, and it seems that one side of the leaf is blemished. It has sort of a shriveled brown area on it. I don't know what to do, or just will it take care of itself and grow out of the stage?
We have an answer for you, Marion. You probably have the fungus called anthracnose, and it's really common this time of year on a lot of different species. We see it on sycamore. There's a number of different species of the fungus, but it's pretty common on green ash. And actually, I saw piles of ash leaflets on my bike ride through Iowa City this morning.
That's all along the curbs in my backyard.
And I saw those black areas. In general, trees recover from that. They can take some defoliation, and usually within a couple weeks when it warms up, those infections stop, and those trees will actually start to re-leaf. The thing is, if you have an ash tree that is not being treated, eventually, being in Iowa City, we do now have the emerald ash borer, so eventually that tree is going to start seeing problems related to the emerald ash borer, depending on what part of town you're in. But as far as the leaves falling off, I'd give it a couple weeks, and once it starts warming up, they should start to look better. But with the conditions the way they are, they can lose quite a few of those leaflets this time of year.
All right, Marion, sorry that's not better news. Thanks a lot for your call. And we'll slip in another email question here from a different Marion, this one in Indianola. We have an acreage, and I've noticed that we have many anthills, 20 plus. Is it harmful to other animals, baby birds, et cetera, or plants and trees to have anthills? Should I try to get rid of them?
No.
Yay.
They're fine.
What a great answer. Super easy. And she also would like to transplant some of her lilacs. Do you have any advice on that?
Well, they don't want to do it now. Typically, when you transplant something, you'd like to do it when they're basically dormant or leafless. So basically, late March, early April. Doing it right now would be very difficult in that you're going to be damaging the root system, and we're moving into summer where they need a lot of moisture. And with that reduced root system, they may not be able to keep up. So right now would not be a good time.
All right. So be patient on that
one. Next year.
All right. We'll see if we can get this one quickly from Lynn. Ground squirrels are repeatedly digging up my new plantings and container plantings. What can I do to deter them? Any thoughts?
Boy, again, you might try some type of animal repellent. They're readily available. Or you could put something on the surface to maybe discourage them. Yeah. Some type of mulch, for example.
All right. Well, good luck with that, Lynn. I know a lot of people struggle with that, and hopefully it gets better. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa with me, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Duran, and Mark Vitosh, DNR Forester. They're here to answer your questions. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and we're here to answer your questions about the plants and trees in your life. With me, DNR Forester Mark Vitosh and Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. You can email us, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org, or call 866-780-9100. Let's go next to Ed in Ottumwa. Hi, Ed.
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I have a property that has six older apple trees on them. They're about 20 or 25 years old. They're about 18 or 16 or 18 inches at the trunk. And they're overgrown and out of control. And obviously they have some blossoms and some apples on them now. But I'm wondering how dramatically this fall should I trim those old trees, open them up or trim them open, and also, if I were to replace these trees, do they have a recommendation? I live in Ottumwa, in the southeastern part of the state.
Well, as far as renovating them, that's probably going to take maybe 2 or 3 years, and so I would wait till next year, like in March or early April. And I guess the first thing that I would do would be go out and remove basically dead or broken branches, that type of thing. Maybe also a few branches that maybe grow upward or inward, that type of thing, and leave it at that. And then come back the next year and maybe take out some branches that are hanging too low. If the tree is extremely dense, maybe do some thinning, removing some of the smaller limbs within the canopy. And then come back the third year and maybe do some more thinning.
All right. So
as far as replacing those,
project.
Right. As far as replacing those, we have many, many apple cultivars that do well in Iowa, so that's not a problem. And most of the trees nowadays are either semi-dwarf or dwarf. They're smaller in size. They're much easier to manage and maintain than your typical standard tree.
All right. Ed, thank you so much for your call. And next up, let's go to Mary in Iowa City. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I have quite a few giant alliums blooming in my gardens right now, but my yard is surrounded by woodland, and some of them seem to have jumped into the woods. Not too many, maybe a half a dozen. And blooming in the woods right now. My husband wants them out of there because nothing non-native can grow in his woodland. So my question is, first of all, is there any problem with them growing there? How did they get there, and what's the best way, or what's the right time of year to get them out of there?
Well, there's a lot of different alliums, and most of the ornamental type I've never known to be invasive or spread a great deal, so I'm not sure what type it is. But as far as if you have some
one,
of the,
what was that, Mary?
I said it's the big blue one, the purple one, giant alien.
Well, I've never seen those basically escape from cultivation. But if they have, and you don't want them there, I would just go out and dig them up at this point and get rid of them.
Yeah.
I would be on your husband's side. I'm sorry, from a woodland aspect, since they aren't native, and even though they don't maybe normally do that, if they're starting to do that, then they could start to compete with some of the native stuff in your woodland area.
All right.
So kind of draw the line between your yard and the woodlands, if you could.
All right, so dig them up is Mark's advice, and it's Richard's advice as well. Mary, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, we've got Jeremy in Des Moines. Hi, Jeremy.
Hello. So I have a question about persimmon trees. So I planted some from seed, and I brought them. They did really good in the greenhouse, and brought them home and exposed them to some of those cold frost nights. And now some of the leaves are turning brown. Like, they're only about 3 feet tall. They're just seedlings. And I don't know if it's the potting soil I have them in, if it needs to be more compact dirt or what.
Go ahead, Richard. Go ahead.
Are these in pots or containers?
Yes.
Okay. And you have, they're growing in potting soil or actual soil?
No, potting soil.
Potting soil. And were they outside when it was cold at all, overnight?
Yes.
Well, they may have simply been exposed to freezing temperatures, which damaged the foliage. That would be my guess.
Especially if the edges are brown, Jeremy, and there's still some green. Or if the whole thing is brown and crispy, then that's definitely, because around here, you can actually walk up to some of the leaves and they'll crumble in your hand. But if it's just the edges and the rest is green, that happens sometimes too. So usually in that case, you'll be okay. Even if they're crispy, though, a lot of times the new buds are coming already to try to replace what was damaged, if there was frost damage.
So do I just should I just put them in the ground and they'll be fine? They'll come back then.
Well, if it was frost or freeze damage, they should leave out in a matter of a few more weeks.
Okay.
New leaves.
Thank you.
And I think getting them out is a good idea. And I mean, because hopefully we're not going to have any more frost. So I don't want to say never, but getting them out and keeping them out probably be your best bet.
All right, Jeremy, thanks a lot for your call. I'm not worried about frost, Mark, but are we ever going to see the sun again?
You know, they keep saying there's really no rain with this, but every morning I ride to work, my
glasses get very wet.
I know.
Every time I walk the dogs, it's spitting on me from the sky. Yep.
I don't like tons of sun because I don't like to get burnt, but this is kind of extreme. I will agree.
All right.
On a positive note, I planted last Saturday a lot of annual flowering plants. And since then, they've had a great week to get established.
That's correct.
Other than that, I'm not so sure.
Right. Nice and moist out there, but not flooding yet, which is really
correct.
Nice. So let's keep it that way. Brian is on the line next in Iowa City. Hi, Brian.
Hi. Yeah, I had another emerald ash borer question for our ash tree. I'm sure you've been getting these a lot. We're going to get our ash tree treated. And then we got a notice on the day it was supposed to be treated. We got a notice from the city saying we needed to remove the ash tree. So I guess my question is it best just to cut your loss and just get rid of the tree, or is getting the treatment a viable option?
Is this tree between the street and the sidewalk, Brian, or is it in your yard?
It's in our yard, but there's not a lot of branches over the street, but we have lost a lot of limbs from the tree, and that's why we initially were going to get it treated, and we had some limbs removed, and I've already spent some money on it, so I'm not really looking forward to spend a ton more money to get it removed, but I'm not in love with the tree either, I'd be okay with it being gone.
But it's not in the city right away. It's on your property?
It's on my property, yes.
Yeah. So there is a city ordinance, though. If they feel that that tree is already infested or that tree is a risk, that's probably why you got the notice for removal. I would call them and just talk to them to get that explanation. But my guess is, based on the ordinance, there is narrative in there that allows them, if they feel that that tree is already infested or if it's causing a potential risk, they can do that within the city tree ordinance. So I would just give them a call and find out what their determination was and then go from there.
All right, Brian, thanks a lot for your call. And he says he's not in love with it. So maybe just
he's kind of walking
call.
The edge there.
Right?
Yeah.
All right. Doug's on the line next in Mount Vernon. Hi, Doug.
Ooh, I've got a two-tree question. One is about a ginkgo tree. That 27-degree frost about 2 weeks ago, the buds were just coming out, the leaves, and from top to bottom, it's all brown. Everything's dead on those buds. Is that going to come back?
I think it has a good chance, Doug. Most of the stuff I'm seeing is coming back. You know, as Richard said, you know, probably within, you should know within the next 2 to 3 weeks, you'll start to see new buds coming and stuff. But even if you don't see something the next 2-3 weeks, scrape, if it's still green, give them some time. But most of the stuff that I've seen is still coming back.
Okay. The other question is, we have a walnut tree, about a young walnut tree, 6-inch diameter trunk, and 30 feet away we planted 2 different species pear trees, Japanese pear trees, and they did not do very well at all. We planted them about 4 or 5 years ago. And now I'm trying to raise the pear trees out of the shoots coming out of the ground again. I'll leave the best shoot. But is the walnut tree a problem with those pear trees?
Well, I think if they're Asian pears, it may be a lack of cold hardiness. They're not as hardy as the European pears. And as far as the suckers, fruit trees are typically produced by grafting, where they graft the desired variety onto a hardy rootstock. But that rootstock is just an ordinary pear, and it's probably not going to produce a good edible fruit. So I would be inclined to remove it.
All right, Doug, thanks a lot for your call. Let's get through some email questions here from Jack in Des Moines. We have a large maple tree on our property in a mature neighborhood. No new construction going on. However, this mature tree is already losing a lot of green leaves. The leaves appear to be nipped off at the very end of the leaf or perhaps with a short stem. Does it need professional help or is this simply a benign condition?
He may have a couple things. If there's actually shoots laying on the ground, have him look to see if there's a cut edge. He may have squirrel issues. Squirrels will chomp off
little...
Which
is a fairly benign condition.
It won't kill the tree, but that's what I would look for to see if there's that. But then also, they do get anthracnose, so if just leaves are falling off and they're not cut, he could be seeing some anthracnose or frost damage, too.
All right. Yeah, we have been losing a lot of stemmed leaf clusters from our squirrel condition, which we consider to be benign at our house. The dogs disagree, but humans agree that it's a benign condition.
Right. It won't kill the tree.
All right. From Tom in Iowa City, a question about Creeping Charlie. I've been working to remove invasive species, including honeysuckle, garlic mustard, and Dame's Rocket from the wooded ravine in my backyard. But I've noticed that Creeping Charlie is spreading from the lawn into the woodland. Is it invasive in woodlands, and should I try to remove it?
Absolutely, it would be. It does great in the shade. So I would try to destroy it in the grassy areas next to the wooded area. And you can apply a broadleaf herbicide in the fall, typically sometime between late September, early November, 2 applications, and typically a product that contains triclopyr. T-R-I-C-L-O-P-Y-R should do it.
All right, and in a wooded area, is that a concern that he might damage other...
Well, you don't want to do it in the wooded area. Okay, you want to get it before it gets in the wooded area.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
But in the wooded area, he should dig it, right?
Pull it and dig it, yes.
Okay. From Emmanuel in Strawberry Point. He's wondering, how far away from a tree do you have to be to dig and plant vegetables?
Well, most vegetables need at least 6 hours of direct sun. So you're typically going to have to be beyond the drip line of the tree in most cases.
All right. And we don't really need to worry about the roots of trees in that situation because we have to be far enough anyway, and the vegetable plants aren't going super deep, right?
Well, right. If you're beyond the drip line, sure, you're going to be chopping off a few roots, but the tree should be able to handle that.
I would measure the diameter of the trunk at 4.5 feet and then multiply that times 1.5. And the one thing is, I wouldn't rototill an area, a huge area, if he's within that zone still, because he could cause some damage, even if he's outside the drip line.
All right. And here's a question from Mary. I had to dig up tulip bulbs this week while the foliage was still greenish yellow. What should I do with them before it's time to plant bulbs in the fall?
I would probably toss them. And I say that because they were dug kind of prematurely, and therefore the bulbs are going to be very weak, and most likely they're not going to bloom next spring. So I'd probably toss them, buy new ones.
All right. From Keith in Waterloo, I have a sycamore tree that was planted 10 years ago. The bark made its major change last year, as expected, but the tree has yet to bud this year. Normal or cause for concern?
We're seeing this, but we saw some damage on some sycamore, depending on what their seed source was originally, based on the 2019 winter. If he's going to see something, he should see it within the next couple weeks. If he doesn't, then there could be concern.
Okay, and I do remember.
Kind of on that border, as far as the further north you get, you start to push the hardiness a little bit, and depending on the source of where the original source of the tree was and its seed source, we see some variation in their winter hardiness.
All right, and final question from Anne. We have a large deck on the east side of our house. At first, we planted sand cherries on three corners of the deck to provide shade. After 10 years or so, they died. We replaced them with a small tree version of the same family. Now they're no longer healthy, and we've removed two of them. What do you suggest for a replacement that grows quickly but not too large? And Mark, you've got 30 seconds.
How about some type of very small crab apple?
All right. Jeff Isles would be proud. Mark Vitosh, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Mark Vitosh, DNR Forester. Richard Giron, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. And of course, we will be back again next Friday with Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Matt Alvarez, Dennis Reese, Caitlin Harrop, and Rick Brewer. You can get in touch with us anytime. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And of course, you never have to miss a show anymore. You can always listen to the podcast of Talk of Iowa. Subscribe to the Talk of Iowa podcast anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm Charity Nebbe. Have a great weekend.